Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. You can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, Spanish National Radio, NHK Japan, and Russia's Sputnik Radio. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Some German politicians were asked to grade Joe Biden on his first 100 days as president. Then brief reports from around the world on COVID and the vaccines. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
In his first foreign policy speech as U.S. president, Joe Biden declared back in February that, quote, America is back. The message, the days of Donald Trump's America First isolationism were over. But has the U.S. president delivered on that promise? We asked some of Germany's leading politicians to grade the first 100 days of the Biden presidency.
On the whole, I like his political style. It's factual. It doesn't shy away from difficult topics, and it doesn't revert to activism. In view of that, I give him a good grade.
The situation in the U.S. is not easy because the country is so deeply divided. The new administration is trying to bridge some of these gaps by investing in infrastructure and taking on a huge challenge of becoming carbon neutral. Change is possible, even when starting from such a low base.
Our worst fears have been confirmed. Biden is leading America towards catastrophe, both domestically and in terms of foreign policy. Our biggest worry is the confrontation with Russia. This clearly worries us. The same goes for Germany, especially the calls to stop the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. The Nord Stream 2 project is clearly in Germany's interest, and the U.S. has no business interfering in it.
It has been an amazing change. Joe Biden kept his word. In a way, America is back, and we see with great satisfaction that many decisions have been taken that really make a difference. The United States is back in the Paris Climate Accords. We are working with the United States and the World Health Organization.
What Joe Biden is trying to do is a surprise. Creating more jobs, investing in infrastructure, prioritizing sustainable development. It shows he really wants to regain people's trust in politics.
President Biden is ready to listen, despite all the opposing interests lined up against him. In that, he is completely unlike his predecessor. It's a huge advantage to be able to talk to someone who is open and receptive, instead of someone who always gave the impression that he kept a loaded gun in his drawer.
The European Union is suing the vaccine maker AstraZeneca over delays in deliveries after the company reduced its supply commitments by two-thirds this year. And Israel's health ministry says it is examining whether cases of heart inflammation are linked to the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine. Most were reported in men under the age of 30.
Turkey is entering a full lockdown beginning on Thursday to curb a surge in infections and deaths. Schools will be closed and domestic travel restricted until May 17th. Hong Kong will reopen bars and nightclubs beginning April 29th. For people who have received their first vaccine doses. The announcement comes as authorities there try to boost a sluggish uptake of vaccines. And Israel has announced plans to reopen the country for tourism. The first group trips for vaccinated tourists will start at the end of May. Individual travelers who have been vaccinated may be allowed to enter beginning in July.
BioNTech's co-founder has voiced confidence that the company's vaccine works against the Indian variant of the virus and says tests are continuing. Brazil's Senate has opened an inquiry into whether President Jair Bolsonaro's government committed criminal negligence or corruption in its handling of the pandemic. And South Korea is hoping to encourage more people to get vaccinated by granting exemptions from quarantine measures to those who've been inoculated. At the moment, anyone who's been in contact with a confirmed patient or returned from overseas must quarantine for 14 days.
India has set another global record in coronavirus cases, reporting almost 380,000 new infections in the last day. Medical aid from abroad has started arriving in the country, but hospitals are still struggling with shortages of staff and supplies, including oxygen. India's healthcare system is so overwhelmed that many patients are being turned away. A U.S. Navy ship fired warning shots at Iranian military vessels in the Persian Gulf on Monday. Three Iranian boats came within 100 meters of a pair of U.S. warships. The incident comes as world powers are seeking to bring Iran back into a nuclear accord struck in 2015.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. 1 billion doses of COVID vaccines have been administered worldwide. 1 in 4 people in rich countries have received it, while 1 in 500 in low-income nations. Bill Gates again denied that patent rights on COVID vaccines should be suspended to help rein in the pandemic. Radio Havana, Cuba.
More than 1 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been administered worldwide. This according to a tally, with more than half given in just 3 countries. A report shows that 1 in 4 people in rich countries have been vaccinated, compared with 1 in every 500 in low-income nations. At least 1,200,000 doses have been administered in 207 countries and territories as of the past weekend, less than 5 months after the first mass inoculation programs began to be rolled out. This according to AFP News Agency, citing figures from official sources. The milestone was reached as a daily record of more than 893,000 coronavirus infection cases were registered worldwide on Saturday, primarily due to an alarming surge of the virus in India. 58% of the vaccine doses have been administered in 3 countries, the United States with 225.6 million doses, China with 216.1 million doses, and India with 138.4. While the majority of poor countries have also started to vaccinate, mainly thanks to the COVAX program, inoculation is still largely a privilege of high-income countries, as defined by the World Bank, which are home to 16% of the world's population, but have administered 47% of vaccine doses. A suggestion to waive patent restrictions on COVID-19 vaccines has been rejected by multi-billionaire Bill Gates, who says he doesn't believe intellectual property has anything to do with the drawn-out global effort to rein in the pandemic. Vaccines developed by the pharmaceutical giants like Pfizer and Moderna enjoy global protection under the WTO World Trade Organization. Considering the scarcity of the medicines, there have been increasing calls from countries like India and South Africa, international relief organizations, and public figures to waive those protections so that poorer countries can get better access to the medicines. However, one of the most publicized figures in the global vaccine campaign, Bill Gates, apparently believes it's a bad idea. When asked by Sky News' Sophie Ridge if stripping intellectual property protections from the vaccine recipes would be helpful, the founder of Microsoft responded with an emphatic no. Political observers say that Bill Gates speaks as if all of the lives being lost in India are inevitable, but eventually the West will help when in reality the US and UK are placing their knee on the neck of developing states by refusing to break the protections. Bill Gates and his foundations are longtime defenders of intellectual property protections. And now critics are accusing Gates of deliberately wasting an opportunity to help reshape how intellectual property works for matters of greater public good.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, though the podcasts are not being updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. Next, Radio Exterior de España or Spanish National Radio. Allison Hughes reports on an ongoing Israeli detention without charges of a Spanish woman working for a healthcare NGO. A fire broke out on an Iranian oil tanker off the shore of Syria following a drone attack, which was unclaimed but presumed to be from Israeli forces who continue bombing raids in Syria. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute published its latest report on global arms spending. Spanish National Radio.
A Spanish woman working in a healthcare NGO and living in Palestine near the town of Bethlehem has been held in an Israeli prison without charges since she was arrested in her home over 2 weeks ago. On Monday, Juana Ruiz attended hearings at the military court for the fourth time since her imprisonment. The court martial will determine whether or not to prolong her detention. According to Israeli law, in the occupied territories, a prisoner can be held for up to 72 days without charges. Nonetheless, there remain Palestinian prisoners held without charges in administrative detention for longer periods. The 60-year-old Spaniard is married to a Palestinian and has been living in the occupied territories for the past 3 decades. The Spanish government has called on Israel to release Juana Ruiz immediately. The European Union has frequently called attention to Israel's practice of intimidating foreign NGOs in the occupied territories. A fire broke out on an Iranian tanker off the Syrian coast on Saturday, the result of an attack by drones that was sent from Lebanese water, according to Sana'a, the Syrian news agency. The tanker was near the coastal town of Banyas, a site of an important refinery. War-torn Syria has faced gasoline and fuel oil shortages this year, with supplies rationed in government-held areas. It has become increasingly dependent on Iranian oil shipments, but tightening U.S. sanctions on Iran, Syria, and their allies have made delivery more difficult. Although Israel has not taken responsibility for the attack, the IDF has repeatedly fired on Iranian ships and military outposts in Syria during the 11-year war there. Some reports say 3 people died in the attack, others that there were no casualties. Iran's chief of armed forces has said they don't know who launched the drone, but that Israel will, quote, be taught a good lesson nonetheless. The Israeli military has not commented. In mid-April, Israel sabotaged Iran's nuclear plant at Natanz, causing a power outage that destroyed the centrifuges for uranium enrichment, just as representatives of the signatory countries of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal were meeting in Vienna to revive the accord. U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew from the accord and raised crippling sanctions against Iran in 2018. Israel has always opposed the deal. Last week, Israeli airstrikes targeted Syria again, killing one and wounding 3 others. Earlier, a Syrian anti-aircraft missile fired at an Israeli Air Force jet. The missile landed in a desert inside Israel. According to Western intelligence, Israel has expanded strikes on Iranian targets within Syria in recent months. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, or SIPRI, published its latest report on global arms spending on Monday. With military expenditure worldwide increasing by 2.6% from 2019, total global arms spending rose to almost $2 trillion in 2020. While global gross domestic product shrank by 4.4% due to the COVID-19 pandemic, military spending continued to grow and consequently represented 2.4% of the global GDP in 2020, up from 2.2% in 2019. The pandemic did not have an effect on military spending, although some countries reallocated funds from defense for the medical emergency. This was the case of Chile and South Korea. Other countries, including Brazil and Russia, spent considerably less than their original 2020 military budgets. According to SIPRI data, the five biggest spenders last year were the United States, China, India, Russia, and the United Kingdom. Together, they accounted for 62% of the global military expenditure. China's military spending grew for the 26th consecutive year. The U.S. clocked its third year of increased defense budgets with a significant 4.4% increase over 2019. At an estimated $778 billion, U.S. military spending in 2020 accounted for 39% of the global total.
Those reports by Allison Hughes were from Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Their news reports are now a daily segment of a magazine-style program, which may be heard at their website, rtve.es, and by podcast as REE. On shortwave, they broadcast from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time at 17855 and 11940. On to NHK Japan. In a claimed effort to build stronger ties in the Indo-Pacific region, Britain is deploying a fleet of warships and a new aircraft carrier next month to the Indian Ocean and then to the Pacific. Then an update on the military coup in Myanmar. NHK Japan.
We begin with Britain's efforts to build stronger ties in the Indo-Pacific region at a time when China is growing more assertive in locking horns with the United States. The UK will deploy a fleet of warships and aircraft next month, led by its new flagship, HMS Queen Elizabeth. The carrier strike group plans to visit more than 40 countries over its seven-month voyage from the Mediterranean to the Indian Ocean and the Pacific. It will make port calls in Japan, India, South Korea, and Singapore. Defense Secretary Ben Wallace said the move will help Britain protect its influence and signal its power. He also touched on China's military buildup in the region, but said the UK has no intention of being confrontational or provocative. Officials say the deployment will allow Britain to engage with friends, including Japan.
We're very like-minded nations. We're both open maritime trading nations. And the reflection of all that is why not only will we visit, but we will exercise together as well.
The move is part of a recent overhaul of British defense policies, which sees the Indo-Pacific region as critical for its security and economic goals.
Myanmar's military chief says he'll consider accepting a special envoy from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. The country's state television reported Senior General Ming Aung Hlaing's comments on Monday. He was speaking at a meeting of the State Administration Council, the highest decision-making body set up by the military following the February coup. He said he'll consider accepting the envoy if doing so will help bring stability to Myanmar. The dispatch of an envoy to mediate dialogue among all parties in the crisis is one of 5 points ASEAN leaders agreed on when they met to discuss Myanmar on Saturday. Ming Aung Hlaing also attended the meeting. The leaders called for an immediate cessation of violence in Myanmar. The military also posted a press release saying it'll give careful consideration to constructive suggestions by ASEAN leaders once the situation stabilizes in the country. The National Unity Government, which was formed by ousted lawmakers, issued a statement about the ASEAN meeting on Tuesday. It says they wish to work with ASEAN to achieve a constructive outcome in Myanmar. It also says there must be an unconditional release of political prisoners, including Aung San Suu Kyi, before any constructive dialogue can take place. Meanwhile, heavy fighting erupted on Tuesday between a minority insurgent group and the Myanmar army near the Thai border. An official of the Karen National Union told NHK that its troops have captured an army outpost in an area controlled by the group. A local human rights group says 753 people have been killed in the crackdown and more than 3,400 are in detention.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for a production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts like a generous listener in Ukiah, California. We will conclude with Sputnik Radio. On George Galloway's show, academic Deepa Govindarajan Driver discussed why the press has stopped reporting on the incarceration of Julian Assange. He remains in Britain's most notorious maximum security prison without formal charges. She talks about the significance of WikiLeaks and what Julian has accomplished. Sputnik Radio.
Julian Assange is the most famous journalist behind bars in the world.
But there's not much news coverage of Julian Assange's presence in Britain's maximum security Belmarsh prison, alongside Britain's worst terrorists and murderers.
To help make sense of it all, academic and leading trade unionist Dr. Deepa Driver joins us now.
Here we have the world's most important political prisoner, and during an international pandemic, he is being locked down 22 hours a day in a maximum security prison where he is only one of two prisoners, I believe, who's there for nonviolent crime. And so-called crime, of course, because as we know, what he did was to reveal what the criminals were doing in terms of war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan, and also crimes of powerful corporations like Trafigura, which was dumping toxic waste off the Ivory Coast, TTIP, which is the kind of legislation which puts corporations in a powerful position over and above sovereign nation states and allows them to control our economies and control how they are scrutinized. It is astonishing that despite Julian winning his hearing against extradition to the United States, District Judge Vanessa Barezza decided that she would deny him bail in order to, in her opinion, give the United States a fair opportunity for contesting her decision. Now, you will remember that this is the same judge who wanted to hear the case as soon as possible, because she said Julian was being held in this maximum security prison, and wasn't it in his interest for the case to be heard quickly, even when the United States indictment had not properly been served on him? And suddenly now she has no regard for the fact that he continues to stay in a maximum security prison, even though he's won his hearing. The British state has long been colluding with the United States to suppress Julian Assange, to suppress WikiLeaks, to suppress dissent. And most ordinary people have seen it very clearly during the COVID crisis, and particularly in relation to the demonstrations against the murder of Sarah Everard, particularly against the demonstrations against the protest bill, where the state has come down very heavily on individuals who choose to challenge how the state exercises its powers. Right now, he's not even being given proper access to his lawyers, which he would get if he were on bail and were able to meet them and were able to
organize. Incredible.
It's completely a travesty that this is going on in London, in Belmarsh, and none of the British newspapers are bringing themselves to cover it. The Guardian and the New York Times and the Washington Post have a lot to be ashamed of in terms of the way in which they bought into the imperialists' agenda to vilify Julian. To say he tormented his cats, to say he smeared feces on the wall, without recognizing that this is one of the most intelligent, capable, and the most powerful journalists who has who has a 100% record of accuracy, account that most other journalists would not be able to come anywhere near.
Why is WikiLeaks and sites like it important?
When Julian envisaged WikiLeaks, it was a time when newspapers were print papers largely. And when whistleblowers communicated with journalists, it was usually, you know, whistleblowers were still talking to journalists, but it was small volumes of information which you would send or communicate with a journalist privately. But as we went on to the online world, we had certain really great challenges and also certain really great important benefits. Firstly, whistleblowers could give you vast amounts of information electronically from, say, the Iraq war logs or the Afghan war logs. So there was this electronic information availability, but there was also a huge amount of surveillance as there is today. And there was this risk that whistleblowers, either their data would be insecure or they themselves would be put at risk. And so what WikiLeaks did was it created what is very new and very unusual, which is an electronic Dropbox. It's now used all over the world. 23 whistleblowing organizations and lots of newspapers have an electronic Dropbox. And WikiLeaks pioneered that. It also pioneered this idea of security of the document as well as security of the whistleblower. And it pioneered a very important step in journalism, which was to allow whistleblowers to talk to journalists, not just to those at the New York Times and the Guardian and the Washington Post who are interested in world events, perhaps self-censoring quite a lot because many of them are owned by oligarchs who allow a narrow range of debate, but also allowing whistleblowers to come in touch with local journalists, for example, in Tunisia, helping with the revolution there and the challenge of corrupt officials in Africa, in various parts, allowing for corruption and the suppression of dissent to become more visible and allowing us to scrutinize what's really going on in the world, for us to surveil the state rather than for Big Brother to look over our shoulders. And that was a huge step change in journalism. And Julian Assange is a very important journalist and publisher for allowing that. What he's also really important for is for being this small organization called WikiLeaks was standing up to the US State Department, to the CIA, and saying, we are going to reveal your crimes. We are going to reveal how you killed and raped and murdered and tortured hundreds of thousands of civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, and he did that and they didn't like it.
They didn't like it. They told him to shut down. And the courage was where he stood up and continued to do it. Because if we talk about Black Lives Matter, the lives in Iraq and Afghanistan must count.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us, Dr. Deepa Driver.
That excerpted interview was by Gayatri and James on George Galloway's program, heard on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website, along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.